Life Audio.
Christian Parent Crazy World with Catherine Seegers is brought to you by Life Audio and is part of our Faith Toolkit series. For more inspirational faith-affirming podcasts, visit lifeaudio.com.
Welcome to Christian Parent Crazy World, the podcast that tackles tough topics to help you be a godly parent in an ungodly world. I am your host, Catherine Seegers, and in today's episode, we will tackle this provocative question: what do most Americans not understand about freedom? And please know that I'm not trying to insult any of you by the implications of that question. I would include myself in that majority of Americans before I encountered the deep and profound work of the man I'm going to introduce you to today. He is truly one of the world's foremost experts on freedom. I would put him at the tip top of the pack when it comes to understanding where freedom comes from, what it takes to procure and maintain it, and the greatest threats to our freedom today. In this episode, we are going to begin a crash course in freedom with Oz Guinness. That's the plan for this episode of Christian Parent Crazy World. So let's get started.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hey, mamas and papas, don't forget to hit that subscribe button on whatever app you are listening on. And please consider giving us a 5-star review. Those reviews really help when people are searching for the material we cover here on CPCW. Alrighty, so today's episode covers a lot of ground. You will hear the riveting life story of one of the few remaining survivors of the Communist Revolution in China, which happened in 1949, by the way. He is perhaps the last Westerner in the world who is a survivor of that revolution. And you will hear why his perspective is not one in a million. No. It is an authoritative and decisive 1 in 8 billion perspective. One in the world when it comes to Marxism, which is the greatest threat to freedom in the West today. You will also hear about how our country's revolution was unique in human history and what it was founded on. You're going to hear the vital framework necessary for freedom, and you will hear what so many of us Americans and Westerners, heck, just people, all people, don't understand about freedom, along with a few other vitally important golden nuggets of truth. My guest today is Oz Guinness, who has been given the apropos description of being a quiet voice on behalf of faith, freedom, truth, reason, and civility. That is truly a fitting portrayal. He is such a kind and gentle soul, and he has one of the sharpest minds you will ever encounter. He is literally like a walking encyclopedia with the remarkable ability of recalling dates and names and quotes, along with a brilliant and accurate assessment of world events and their significance in human history, all with such ease. Oz has a doctorate in philosophy from Oxford and is the author or editor of more than 30 books, including the Magna Carta of Humanity, Sinai's Revolutionary Faith, and the Future of freedom, which we will discuss today. I would say that after the Bible, this is perhaps the most important book I have ever read. Now, one last thing. I've heard other interviewers far more knowledgeable than me say that Oz kind of knocks you back on your heels, not from his disposition or demeanor, which is incredibly gracious and humble, but by the sheer breadth and scope of his wisdom, knowledge, skill, his experience, and understanding. It is truly awe-inspiring. You are in for such a treat. So without further ado, here is the first part of my interview with Oz Guinness. Oz Guinness, welcome to Christian Parent Crazy World. It is such an honor to have you here with us today.
Oh, my privilege. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. You know, I became familiar with your work several years ago, and I've since been just a voracious consumer of everything you do. I've got a collection of your books. I have a stack of them right next to me that I'm working my way through, and I'm always on the lookout for your interviews. And I have a 4x6 foot dry erase board in my office/classroom. We homeschool our kids. And I put little quotes all over it that have inspired me and transformed my thinking. And you are responsible for quite a number of the quotes on my board, either you directly or someone you introduced me to. Like, I'm squinting to read them right now. St. Augustine, to understand a nation, look at what it loves supremely. You introduced me to that. Rudyard Kipling, I love your quote. What knows he of England that only England knows? You introduced me to that as well. But Centre, at the top of it is your golden triangle of freedom, that freedom requires virtue and virtue requires faith, which requires freedom. So that's in the center of my board. I keep it there. It's so inspiring. And, you know, I've been just trying to consume so much of what you have to offer because I believe you have such a unique voice, which I want to dig into your history in just a moment. But first, let's introduce you to my audience because your name, you know, I don't know if everyone in my audience is as familiar with you as I've become over the last few years. So your name, Guinness, should ring some bells for them. So tell us about your family and how that translates to, I guess we'll get to your early childhood in a little bit. Tell us about the Guinness family.
Well, some people immediately think of beer.
Yes, that does come to mind.
Immediately think of the Book of Records, the Guinness Book of Records. And that's actually, both of those are my family, but not my particular branch. I'm descended from the youngest son of Arthur Guinness the Brewer, who was actually a wonderful Christian. He came to faith through the preaching of John Wesley in the First Great Awakening. And he shaped our family firm in Christian principles, paying higher than average wages, giving health care to the workers, all sorts of things, which were very rare in the 18th century. So I'm actually very proud of the background, too. Although I come from a different branch of the family.
That's a justice warrior right there. You have that, you come by that naturally, don't you?
Well, you know, my grandfather was the first one who went out as a missionary to China. He was one of the first Western doctors in China. He actually treated the last emperor, if anyone's seen that film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my parents were both born in China, and I was born in China. So my first 10 years were years of war and famine. And then revolution, of course. So
that was 1941, was it?
I was born in 41. I don't know, obviously remember that. Same year as Pearl Harbor and various things like that, as well as the horror of Hitler's planning the Holocaust. So it's a very crucial year, often considered the low point of the 20th century.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about this. I'm sure that there are still some people alive in China today that live through the Chinese Revolution. But I was curious, you may be one of the very few people who lived through the Chinese Revolution as a Westerner that's still alive today that can speak to it significantly. Your family suffered indescribable loss leading up to that revolution at the hands of Mao Zedong. So you subsequently then went on to study extensively philosophy and history and theology and apologetics with Francis Schaeffer and culture extensively. So, and then I would add to that that God certainly gifted you intellectually. So you have such a gift to not only through your personal experience, but also through your studies of connecting all of these historical dots, which might just give you not a one in a million perspective on these things, but perhaps closer to one in 8 billion, one in the world.
I'm very grateful because it gave me my first, I was 7 years old when the revolution broke out and lived there 2 years under the Reign of Terror. Mm-hmm. And so I was nearly 10 when I left. I would say it gave me a very realistic view of life, which has been very important. And of course, it gave me a very realistic view of Marxism. So like the people in Eastern Europe who grew up under communism in Poland and Czech Republic and so on, I'm not naive. Many young Americans are very naive about Marxism. They think it's all a matter of justice and idealism. But anyone who's seen it, you know, their revolutions never succeed. Their oppressions never end. And the futures they promise never arrive. And some of those lessons of realism were built into me as a boy.
Explain to us what you lived through there. Walk us through that.
Well, I'll never forget, my dad said to me in January 49, son, we're in trouble. Chiang Kai-shek, who was the leader of so-called Free China, had just abandoned the city, and we were at the mercy of the Red Army. So 3 months later, they crossed the Yangtze, the great river outside of Nanjing, and in they came. And they festooned the town with loudspeakers, so there were trials in the morning, executions in the afternoon. Mm. The fear was palpable. I mean, you met people you knew well, and they passed by you in the street with not a hint of recognition. Why? Their lives would be forfeit if they recognized they knew you. You went out in the streets, and instantly a crowd came round shouting, death to the blue-eyed foreign devils, and so on. Mm. My father was accused, trumped up charges. They all fell apart. But it was a time of incredible fear. But my own parents had a deep and quiet faith. And I learned so much from them. I never saw their faith wavering once in all those terrible years. And I sort of summarized it. You know, God is greater than all. God can be trusted in all situations. Have no fear. Have faith in God. And so my first 10 years were incredibly important for my whole realistic view of life and a robust sense of faith in the Lord.
Mm. And the magnitude of that loss, I've heard you speak so poignantly about it before. You lost two younger brothers in the famine, didn't you?
Well, that was in the famine, not under Mao Zedong. So
okay.
Mm-hmm. When I was a small boy, that was earlier, we were caught between three armies. You had the Japanese on one side who'd killed 17 million in their invasion. You had the communists, and then you had the nationalists. And we were caught in a terrible famine in which locusts descended and just devoured everything. So Time magazine covered it well, Teddy White. 5 million died in 3 months. And there was cannibalism, people selling their children for an evening meal. There was no food, no medicine. My two brothers died. I nearly died. My mother nearly died. I survived by the grace of the Lord and the skin of my teeth. But those were, I don't remember that, of course. I was a 3-year-old and I heard about it afterwards from my parents and others who were there. But that was really hair-raising time when we joined the refugees on the road looking for food and water. There were 10 million, far more than anything you've seen in Syria or whatever recently. It was really quite incredible. And then we moved to the capital, which was where the revolution took place.
Mm, that's incredible. That's incredible history. So in the introduction to your book, which I would recommend this book, The Magna Carta of Humanity, Sinai's Revolutionary Faith and the Future of Freedom, you give what I think is one of the most cogent and enlightening assessments of where America is as a nation today and what the world is heading towards. And you cover the 5 main revolutions in modern history. Share with us about those and the differences between them, because you've got the English Revolution with 1642 mm-hmm. and then the American Revolution, 1776, and then the 3 subsequent ones, which are a radical departure, the French, the Russian, and the Chinese, which you lived through. Tell us about those.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, the first two are often considered very different because the English Revolution failed. It's called the Lost Cause, the King Came Back, and the American Revolution, of course, succeeded, 1776. But actually, they're both very similar in that the roots of both of them were the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The 17th century, following the Reformation in the 16th, was fascinated. It was called by historians the Biblical Century. And they were even atheists like Thomas Hobbes, great political scientist, they were fascinated what they called the Hebrew Republic. Because if you think the church had been the faith of Europe since 380 AD, but the church had been largely Catholic, and the Catholic Church copied the structures of Rome. And the Roman structures were hierarchical. You had a Caesar, consuls, senators, and you had a pope, cardinals, bishops. But hierarchical power is oppressive and it easily becomes corrupt. The Reformation said, no, that isn't the biblical way. What's the biblical way of politics? Covenantal, the Hebrew Republic. And the Reformation was fascinated with it. So many Americans don't realize things like the consent of the governed or the separation of powers and all these things, they go back to the book of Exodus. The consent of the covenant, three times it says in Exodus, the Lord puts out the covenant. And it says three times in different ways, the people answer all that the Lord says, we will do.
Right.
But even when the Lord of the universe puts out his proposal, it's not ratified in the covenant until you have the consent of the governed. That's an incredibly important part of freedom. And of course, the covenant itself became the U.S. Constitution, we the people. And so the roots of the American experiment at their best are not in Greece, democracy. No, the framers didn't like democracy. It always ended in anarchy or mob rule. Theirs was covenantal constitutional republic. So that's why it's so important.
It's mind-blowing. I mean, I've learned U.S. history at least at a time when it was a little more accurate than it is today with the likes of neo-Marxist ideologies and wokeism getting mixed in the bunch in the 1619 Project. But even still, I didn't learn it that way. I did not learn it that way. And to understand the origin of it, and one thing you talk about so much in your book is just this concept that somehow our freedom came from these 17th century Enlightenment thinkers and that somehow they figured it out. That's not where it came from. It goes back to the Hebrew Republic. And that's just mind-blowing to me that we don't know that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Exodus is the master story of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot more than let my people go, which, of course, is the ringing declaration of Moses. What you have is what's called an ordered freedom. So if you look at the first 11 chapters of Genesis, you have the bookends of history. You have before the flood, anarchy, all freedom, no order, violence, and the Lord judges it. And then you have the Tower of Babel, all order, no freedom. So you have anarchy on one side and authoritarianism on the other side. And what the Lord gives them through Moses is ordered freedom, a covenantal constitutional freedom. And that should be the American way, a distinctive ordered freedom. So freedom is not the permission to do what you like. That's libertarianism and chaos. Freedom is the power to do what you ought.
Ah, that is incredible. So much to dig into there. I want to come back to that in a little bit, maybe in the next episode, a little bit more and really dig into that origin. But explain to us then the difference of the imperatives and the ideals and the foundation bedrock of the English, which the English Revolution, which failed, and then the American Revolution that has succeeded for some time, if we can keep it, and the French Revolution, which came in 1789. What are the distinctive characteristics, the differences between these two revolutions?
Well, take the sources. The English and the American Revolution come from the Bible, largely, sadly, through slavery, not totally, but basically in the Bible. The French Revolution comes from the French Enlightenment, Rousseau and people like that. Or second, the American Revolution, coming from the Bible, is very realistic. You have a separation of powers, you have checks and balances. Why? People are sinners. So you need ambition to counter ambition, with, as Madison says. And of course, he was taught by the great Scottish theologian, John Witherspoon, the president of what's now Princeton. Whereas the French Revolution is utopian. Now, you're going down the line. There are differences at all sorts of points. But today, the key one that counts is justice.
Mm-hmm.
So both the left and we as followers of Jesus agree there is injustice and we must fight it. We agree on that. But how do they fight it? Well, in the left view, there is no truth, postmodernism. Everything is power. So you analyze speech to find out who's the majority, who's the minority, who's the oppressor, who's the victim. And then you weaponize the victim to set up a conflict of powers. It's all power. But here's the problem. If there's no truth, no ideal justice, only power, the only possible peace you can have is when you have a power so powerful it can put down every other power. Now, that's what the Romans called the peace of despotism. In other words, authoritarianism. And that's why the radical left always leads to greater state control and to totalitarianism. Compare that with the biblical way. Take, say, the prophets, where you have this so clearly, or our Lord himself. You have first truth addressed to power. So it's not a matter of majority, power, the strong battalions. One word of truth outweighs the entire world, as Solzhenitsyn says. So he was a one-man dissident who could almost bring down the whole Soviet Union. Why? He had the truth. So you address truth to power like the prophets did. They call for confession and repentance. Repentance is an about turn of heart and mind. And then, of course, you can have forgiveness and then reconciliation. I'm using single words, but you unpack those and you come out to a very, very different direction. So as the rabbis put it, who's a conqueror? Most people would say someone who can defeat their enemy. No, the rabbi said, a great conqueror is someone who can turn his enemy into a friend. That, of course, is what the Jewish and Christian understanding is, through atonement and a prophetic challenge to evil. So the left today is a disastrous way of dealing with it, although hats off to them, they do tackle injustice. We too should, but our way is so much deeper and ends up so much better.
Mm-hmm. I sent some new quotes to make room for on my board here in our interview. I'm going to be transcribing some of this and putting it on my board. Oh, wow. So much to unpack there. I would like to talk about where we are then. You, on the one hand, indict where the left is, but on the other hand, you have a healthy section in your book on this, indict Christianity. We haven't always gotten it right. We have not always been on the right side of many of these justice causes. Now, sometimes we have, but there have been many times when we haven't. We have inadvertently kind of fed some of these groups that have risen up and attach themselves to the Marxist ideologues who they may not even know. Many of the people, the workers on the ground, really understand what they're feeding, the beast that they're feeding, do they?
No, but if we look at history overall, there's no question we're on the side of the angels. Slavery, sadly, is the norm in history.
Yes.
Abolition is the novelty. It was the evangelicals and the Quakers who were the abolitionists. So I'm proud and grateful of the fact my ancestor, Arthur Guinness, the brewer, was a friend and a supporter of William Wilberforce. Mm-hmm. And Wilberforce, the greatest social reformer of all, an evangelical brother. The tragedy of this country was that parts of the South were supportive of slavery. Many evangelicals in America have a bad conscience still. And they don't realize that abolition was led by evangelicals. But go back to the difference between the French and the American revolutions. It explains the present polarization. Everyone's aware of the division in America. America is as deeply divided as at any point since just before the Civil War. But why? A lot of people say it's the social media. Some say it's the coastals, California, New York, against the heartlanders in the Midwest and the South. Some say it's the populists over against the globalists. All of those have a part to play. But I would argue the deepest division is between those who understand America, the Republic, freedom, from the perspective of the American Revolution, 1776, and those who understand America and freedom from the perspective of the ideas coming down from the French Revolution. So postmodernism, the cancel culture, the sexual revolution, critical race theory, all those sort of things are the heirs of the French Revolution. Now, I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, many of our audience are. You remember the book of Galatians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul says to the Galatians, "Who's bewitched you? You're following another gospel. You came to faith through one gospel. You're following a different gospel." What I'm saying to America and others too, who's bewitched you, America? You're following a different revolution. You came to freedom through one revolution, and now you're being taken over by another revolution. But here's the tragedy, Catherine. There's no Lincoln today. So when America was deeply divided in the 1850s, he addressed the evil of slavery. America, a house divided cannot stand, he said. America cannot continue half slave, half free. Mm. And in a way, what I'm saying today is America cannot continue half 1776 and half 1789. The trouble is there's no Lincoln. There's no national leader, certainly no Christian leader, saying, America, you've got to choose.
Now, at this point, the conversation shifted. We started to talk about the long march on our institutions, which has led to the infiltration of neo-Marxist ideology in our colleges and universities. That should be of particular interest to us as parents with kids graduating and going to these colleges and universities. Then we also discussed the kind of national leader that our country desperately needs right now. What is missing on the national landscape in terms of that leadership, and where the church has failed to hold our leadership accountable. And perhaps most importantly, we talked about how to pray for the leader we need so desperately right now. Honestly, this part of the conversation is a little bit controversial. We might step on a few toes there. We talk about why some Christians, particularly evangelicals, have had such a hard time at the ballot box while fully acknowledging the gravity of what we face and what both Oz and I agree is the right course of action right now. I hope that you will tune in for that episode. I think it will help us understand what divides the Christian community in terms of our political choice right now. And the path forward from here. By the way, I decided to make that into a separate episode because with Oz, oh my gosh, I personally need a little time to process and contemplate all that he has to impart. His knowledge and wisdom is paradigm shifting. You know, I've listened to my conversation with him multiple times now, editing it and getting it ready to post. And every time I keep learning new things. So, by the way, you can find a copy of the Magna Carta of Humanity wherever books are sold, and you can find out more about Oz by visiting OzGuinness.com. I'll have all of those good links for you in the show notes. But I'd like to leave you with Oz's brilliant definition of what freedom is. Freedom is not the permission to do what you like. Freedom is the power to do what you ought. Yeah, that one's going on the board. Yeah. So to circle back around to the question I posed at the top of the show, what is the one thing that most Americans don't understand about freedom? Well, our culture looks at freedom as a license to do whatever we want, not the power and the responsibility to do what is in the best interests of others and ourselves, which is what we ought to do. To quote Oz again, freedom is the great enemy of freedom, which is to say, if we use our freedom to do whatever we want, we will destroy freedom and we will enslave ourselves. Galatians 5 verse 1 tells us that it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Amen. I want to thank you for joining me today. Look, I know there are a lot of things you could be listening to right now, and I really appreciate that you took this time to spend with me. I hope you will join me for my next podcast when we take aim at some aspect of our culture that threatens to derail our parenting and steal our kids' faith. If you enjoyed this episode of Christian Parent Crazy World, would you consider telling a friend and sharing it on social media and giving it a good review over on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and following me on Facebook and Instagram? Oh, and maybe you could say that Christian Parent Crazy World is the best podcast you've ever heard in your entire life. Just a thought. And be sure to check out my website, which is KatherineSegers.com. That's Catherine with a C. I have lots of articles and resources there that will help you on your parenting journey. And if you subscribe, I will be sure to send you some really cool free stuff and notify you of future podcasts, articles, and blogs. I want to end this and every episode with a word of encouragement. God gave you your kids, your specific kids, for a reason. That's because you hold the key to unlocking who God created them to be. We'll see you next time.
Christian Parent Crazy World is a production of Life Audio and Salem Media. If you liked what you heard today, please take a second to rate and review this podcast in your favorite podcast app so that more listeners like you can find the show. For more faith-filled, inspirational podcasts, visit us at lifeaudio.com.
What do you do when the world around you is falling apart? It's amazing to me how many people are breathing air. They're going about their business and doing the things you're supposed to do. But if you really ask them, they know that on the inside, they are spiritually and emotionally and relationally dead. If we're not careful, all of us can experience that death. When what we need to do, even as the world around us is falling apart, we need to learn how to march when it would be easier to stay where we are and die. Join me each week on the March or Die Show as we discuss that and so much more.